In the dark, I fed my dreams.
Welcome to episode 341 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes.
Permaculture PIMP with Soulful Grace in a VIP Pimpcast where we
find your place. Yeah, this is a hot one tonight, y'all. I'm telling you what, this is going to be one show that you're going to have to tell everybody, and I mean everybody, about, because we're going to be talking about some results here in Western North Carolina that everybody needs to know about. So, folks, if you haven't done it yet, hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live so the powers that shouldn't be start suppressing us immediately, because they can't have this information out there. And also tell everybody you know to check this out, and please send it to the people you know. Okay, let me just go ahead before we get into it. Look, I got the organic super soldier, the Croatian sensation himself. Say that 10 times. Pat Miletic, we got Doc Will, and he's got a PhD in pimpology as well. And then we got my man Rohit, an environmental engineer over here. And I better not say anything too risque, because his wife's on the other one and she's probably going to put a hook to my head. So anyway, we're here to talk about what happened. These guys were all congregated here a while back, not long after that disaster, that hurricane that happened in Western North Carolina. And as a result, folks, there was toxicity everywhere. And I mean everywhere around here. Dr. Will has probably done more extensive research and study and all that, and has treated a number of people in this area ever since that whole thing happened. Look, in a nutshell, let me just put it to you like this. I had just gotten on Twitter, and one of the first things I ever put out was a 30-second blip that I did with Dr. Will. And from that day forward, I've never been able to go live on X. Well, what did he say in there that was so off-putting to the powers that shouldn't be that they didn't think you should hear about it? In a nutshell, and believe me, I played it so many times and so many people have sent it back to me, it blew my mind. He basically said, after he got done doing this testing, and I quote, "This place rivals Chernobyl." And we were down there, old ladies. And it's basically a retirement community over there for the most part. There are some younger folks over there, but by and large, they're over there coughing, hacking up everything. Will and I are about the same age. In fact, we have the same exact birthday. And we're down there and we're all hacking up. Michelle's with us. And it's not wonderful. Okay. His results didn't look wonderful. And then later on, I came back with Rohit and his team. It was, I don't even know, maybe a month or two later. He did the testing on it, and folks, it was messed up from the feet up. And it's been a real mess. So I'm not going to monologue anymore, y'all. We're just going to jump right into it, because I know a whole lot of people are out here looking for solutions and are looking for answers to a lot of the problems that they're having at their own places. So first of all, welcome, gentlemen. Glad all of you could make it.
Thank you, Billy. Hey.
Thank you, Billy.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all. Let's start with Dr. Will right off. Hey, when we first got out there, so we kind of need to set the stage before we talk about where we are right now. When you first showed up on site, I'm not going to ask any leading questions. Well, I guess to a certain extent I kind of did, but, you know, what was your impression of the site when you first got out there? Because you came here because you thought the data that you were getting from satellites was inaccurate because it was so awful. But what was your assessment when you hit the ground?
So my initial tests were, overall toxicity was extremely high. Overall toxicity. So we'll define this by my lab, and then Rohit can look at come from the accredited labs, because mine isn't accredited. So, but the correlation is unmistakable. Overall toxicity. So our toxicity file in the computer is about 90,000 elements. So that's all different kinds of chemistry, weird chemistry, normal chemistry. It's just bigs. It's like close to 90,000 things, which includes heavy metals, petrochemicals, hydrocarbons of all different kinds and so forth. I do look at radiation, radiation fallout, which is all different kinds of radiation. And again, Rohit can look, can totally speak up from his results, which are fairly consistent. At least I think they're by my looking at them. And then I had a really good friend of mine and business associate who is also an engineer geologist for 38 years, worked for some big name companies like ExxonMobil. He's also a business partner of mine. So he looked at these Rohit's results as well as my results, and basically shared that, you know, it's almost impossible what we've done, but the data is the data, and you can't argue with numbers. Some of the other thing is some weird chemistry, like really high acidity as well as alkalinity all at the same time in the same area. And so I've got pictures, and I don't know if I've shared these pictures with you, Billy. I think I have with Pat, but we found some totes. Tote is a 275-gallon tank on a pallet, basically, and a whole bunch of barrels. So I actually got involved right after late September down there. Some EMS, emergency management systems, some Swift Water guys. We're having some major problems with their health, their skin sloughing off of their body after they've been in the water for 4, 5, 6 hours doing their job. And then we found one of the Swift Water guys actually found some totes and some barrels, radioactive barrels that had radioactive placards on them. My placard is like a sticker that says radioactivity and with a certain number, depending on what's in the barrel or the tote. These placards were on the totes. Some of the totes had acid in them. Some of them had very alkaline chemicals in them. And so we were These emergency management people were contacting me with sending me these pictures because I was there telling them, I was at their facilities teaching them on how to manage being in a toxic environment, because they were obviously concerned with their health because they were having health problems. And so that's how I got involved in all this. And that was downriver from you, Billy. That was over on the Tennessee side, over where the rivers run, dump into, I think it's Lake Douglas.
Yep.
Down there. And since then, there's been a lot of people that have passed away from respiratory distress and heart attacks and so forth. So that's how I kind of got involved. And then I got introduced to Billy through Pat and some other relationships that I had. And so I got to be on site and run these tests. So we have radioactive things we were testing that were high in alkalinity, acidity, both high, weird chemistry, and just overall not a good situation at all for growing anything, actually. So I digress there, Billy, but is that a good premise here starting from how I got and how our tests?
Yeah. So I ended up meeting Pat first, and then we linked up together. You just happened. I mean, it couldn't have been any more fortuitous. So I met you on the site at one area where it's in the Rollins community near Marshall, North Carolina. And we met over there, and we were both having a hard time breathing. Why don't you tell us about your first test results and what they revealed to you? Do you have those handy, or can you kind of give us a synopsis of what you found there?
I do. My first test sites are basically like the control that that I can talk about. You know, overall toxicity levels were high, just weird, strange chemistry. You know, alkalinity is high, acidity high, radioactive elements there, some metals. One of them that we found that was extremely high was arsenic. And then aflatoxins. Aflatoxins are the chemistry that's from the microorganism population in the area. They release these things called aflatoxins or mycotoxins, which was really high. And so that really means when you can look at the aflatoxin level of something, you can then see that the microbiology that's in that area is having a hard time or a stress time. And so it just all basically justifies the whole conversation of there's some nasty things going on. One of the things that really surprised me along the river there, and we spent some time, Billy, we were there, what, 2-3 times now. There's like been zero fish.
None.
Like none. And that's kind of strange for me, especially in some of those eddies that we were watching there. There was like no activity in the river. And then now the foliage is pretty bare. It's still bare along the water lines that I noticed the last time I was there. And so I'm sure we're going to be talking a little bit more about this as we go tonight.
It's funny you bring that up. So in a nutshell, the place was messed up completely. The locals there told me prior to this, despite that river having a reputation already of not being the cleanest thing in the world, they said every single day, in fact, the folks you met out there with the young children who were really, really concerned about their kids playing in the soil, they said there wasn't a single day you couldn't go out there and see fish jumping, especially like a lot of places, you know, when the sun's starting to set or when it's rising, that's when you're going to see a lot of the fish activity, especially in trout. And they said since that time, they have seen absolutely none. Other anecdotes I could add to it, things that ought to grow like nobody's business near the water, things like bamboo, willows, none of them that are by the water's edge will grow at all to this day. So it's a real mess. Let me jump over to Rohit. I think you may be muted there, bro. So why don't you give me the first impression when I met you out there in your team, when you showed up the first time, what were your initial impressions when you got, cause you tested a number of sites out there. I believe one of them was Swannanoa, the coffee house alongside the river. And then finally the area where I was, what was your initial?
Initially it was very, very barren and a lot of dirt. There was nothing, like it had, you know, basically come through a flood, and that coffee shop area actually had a stink to it. You can, you know, it was palpable that you could taste it, the odor or whatever was in the air. But our sampling actually showed similar stuff to what Dr. Will just said. You know, levels of solids were elevated, arsenic was elevated, metals in general were elevated, fecal coliform levels were elevated. It basically was in sync with what Dr. Will found as well. So it was, and the radioactive materials as well were elevated. It was super high in radioactive materials. So it was amazing that people were staying there still in campers and all, because they were still along the shoreline, the waterline, just in campers. You know, so yeah, you're right. The kids were still playing in that sand and all, and that dirt area. But there was nothing growing there for sure.
Did you notice any respiratory distress at all? Because I know my nose burned. My sinuses and my eyes were watering. I was there with Billy probably while we were there, Billy, a couple of hours altogether. And it was very noticeable for me anyhow.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that, but the day that I went, I did notice it was a lot windier the day that I was there. If you remember, Billy, that day, it was pretty windy along the shoreline. So it could just be that the wind was carrying it away and I wasn't as affected by it. But I didn't get any respiratory issues.
Now, I did neglect to say that Rohit, by the way, is the environmental engineer that took the samples both times out there, folks. So I needed to throw that in there. Pat, you were going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, in total, how many people have come down with severe illnesses or passed away, you know, in that valley? You know, what numbers are we looking at right now? Because obviously the mainstream media is not covering it. They're not. You know, so, you know, what's the hardcore numbers, guys?
Well, on my end, I can tell you about anecdotes, and I can also tell you, I was there with Will at the firehouse, and these guys were so, Okay, this is going to sound a little conspiratorial, but since when do I care about that? I'm just going to tell you what these guys said.
This is fact-based, though, Billy. Yeah. This is
yeah. It's. I mean, these guys told me when we first showed up there, it was like I went out there with the impression that I was going to be telling their story on YouTube. I got there, and they made it very clear, hey, bro, you can't be filming nothing. We don't want you recording anything. And these are all veteran firemen out here that did not want us. And I was like, okay, I was a little bit put out at first until they decided to tell us that they were being followed around. This is going to sound crazy, but it's true. The story they told one of them was that immediately after this, there were Air Force sniffer planes flying back and forth across the sky. Black helicopters with no writing on them, which is highly illegal, flew in, took material, and flew out, and hundreds of people have saw these people. Anyway, these guys are down there, and they're recounting the story that Dr. Will was just talking about, having seen a car overturned by the lake. They go in the water. They're wearing their protective equipment. They get out of the water, and their skin is sloughing off with the material. They go to the hospital, and the people in the hospital, this is unbelievable. The people in this local hospital, and we can't give the location because they were absolutely insisted upon it. The people in the hospital were giving them like anti-anxiety medication. And these guys are like, what on earth? So somehow, some way, they reached out to Dr. Will. And then finally, all these people were starting to get some help. And Dr. Will was helping these people. And by the way, he won't tell you this, folks. He was doing it for free on his own dime, driving there and treating them for absolutely free. So kind of a testament of the kind of guy you're dealing with here. And he did all of this, folks, with no thought of reward. I will also say that same with the other guys involved here. So everybody's rocking for the love here. Anyway, these guys tell us, and you could have knocked me over with a feather because it sounds like something straight out of a novel, a detective novel. These guys are saying that black SUVs are following them around when they're going to the grocery store. Doc, am I hearing this wrong? But this is exactly what they said.
No, that's what they said. I was there riding with them and saw some really mysterious things like that as well. So that's what's happened. That's fact.
These guys are being threatened, told don't say anything. Meanwhile, at that time, what was it? At that particular time in this particular location that we can't talk about because these guys are worried about their safety, at that time there were 50 people dead. Now, do we know what the death count is since that time, Doc?
We've surpassed 300. I've talked to several of the people in that area. They've moved away now because I've been working with them personally with their families and their own health. They've moved 100 and some miles north of there to get away from the VOC, the volatile organic compounds, and the other chemistry that's in the air along the river and the lake there. There's three rivers that flow into Lake Douglas. And then the toxicity level on Lake Douglas is extremely high as well. And so there's a lot of people moving away, the ones that are seeing the value in living. But the death tolls from heart attacks, from seizures, neurological problems, Parkinson's type things, basically chemical and radioactive element overload on the body is what's happening. A lot of respiratory failure. The numbers in the hundreds, but because the narrative, the official narrative, you know, here we go. Official narrative is there's no problems. Therefore, they can't label things a certain way. It has to be labeled, you know, respiratory died from respiratory failure or from heart failure or whatever. They're not linking because the narrative, the narrative has to flow properly. And so the medical system abides by the narrative.
Yeah, it's funny how little the silence is deafening. In fact, it's really driving me nuts. Marianne Knox is saying in the comments here, I've been seeing videos inviting tourists to come and join the water sports in North Carolina. Well, you can do what you want, but I'm not getting in there. I'll put it this way. Dr. Will was there with me when we did the subsequent test, and we're going to talk about that, folks. We're going to jump to the chase here, and then we're going to talk about mitigation strategies and how you can apply them. We went there the second time. Now, since that time, some people may be aware that we put in a food forest and the ground cover. You know, when you're working with other people out there, things may not get done the way they should. Anyway, we put in the beginnings of a food forest. We put in blueberries, apples, pears, peaches, you name it, all by that river. Now, folks, I can tell you as a permaculture designer and as a, you know, as a soil scientist in my own right, you know, and a guy who knows how to make some seriously biocomplete compost, look, I can tell you when a tree is healthy and when it is not. Folks, we put this in, I want to say several months ago. I can't even tell you now because every day is Monday. And we got fruit on the trees out there. We got fruit sets on the trees. We got blueberries with the berries on them. But everything in close proximity to the river, like down off the edge, like we were trying to do some stream bank restoration over there. So some of the people have put in things like bamboo, willow, things that do excellent near the river, and all of it's dying. Everything. Well, Doc, you saw it too. I mean, it was all dying by the river.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you came over
sure,
there.
I'm sure Rohit was there too to witness that. I can't imagine it being much different because I think we were there, what, 2 to 3 weeks apart in our visits?
Yeah, but I neglected to point out to Rohit, hey, these are the trees that are – he was out there. I was just trying to keep him from getting himself killed, falling in the water. He was out there like Mission Impossible, man, trying to get these samples. So I was watching him, and we had a few other distractions going on. But, yeah, while he was over there doing – while he was getting the samples and everything, I didn't – you know, I didn't point out to him, hey, you see these – what's left of these trees over here. I mean, they're burned. It's like somebody went by with a blowtorch and burned all this stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, there was no growth at all since the last time I went there and saw those locations. So,
yeah, not by the river anyway, but yeah. The trees we had, they're off and running. They're thriving, and stressed trees don't put on fruit sets, folks. So, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to go right to it. Dr. Will, so you went back and so both of you guys detected some nasty radiation out there. You detected some awful things all the way around. So, Dr. Will, when you first showed up there, you freaked me out because you're taking up the sample. I thought you were testing. I'm looking at the numbers as you're writing them down, and I'm thinking, what? How is this even possible? And then you revealed, you're like, dude, this is the water. I'm like, man, I did all this for nothing. And you're like, no, man, this is the water. And I'm like, oh, okay. So why don't you tell everybody what you found?
So we tested at the water's edge, and then there was a control that was. You kind of have to help me with the description here, Billy. So say it again.
The control was about a football field away.
Right. And it was 50 to 80 feet from the water's edge, that control, right? That was the one that was down just a little ways. That's the one I'm referring to. That's still bad. I mean, it hasn't changed a whole lot. One thing that I did notice, the radioactive numbers on the control got a little bit less. I think that's just from natural degradation. And here again, Rohit can interrupt me at any point in time. But on the control, though, the radiation it had gotten a little bit less over time on that control that was down the street about a block. But otherwise, everything else was fairly elevated. And then there was what did we have? We had the riverbank looked almost like the control. The riverbank would be at the water's edge. That's where those twigs that I called them, and you said, no, that's bamboo. You planted them all there. And I said, well, there's nothing there. It's like a twig. There's no leaves. It literally looked like somebody took a torch to it. And that was at the water's edge, which looks very similar, very, very similar to the control that was 50 or 60 feet or so away from the water's edge. And then there was three other locations where I tested that you had treated with some remediation practices, and the three locations where the remediation took place was it was night and day difference. I mean, it was the overall toxicity went from like 128 down to 4, so that means almost zero toxicity. The chemical poison index went from 116 down to 2, which 0 would be the ultimate cleanliness. Radioactivity went from 110 to 2. Acidity levels went from 158 and 102 down to 1, which is extremely good. Same with alkalinity. It went from 104 and 103 down to 3. So we have a lot of degradation on the bad stuff and an extreme rise on the good stuff. I'm oversimplifying that for people, but I'm sure Rohit, I know his test came out really similar.
Yeah, I had similar results. The remediation site had basically non-detectable levels of parameters like arsenic and barium and things like barium was slightly higher in that first control sample, but everything else was significantly lower. And then the other two samples, it had gone down in the other two locations that were that we took samples at that weren't remediated, but they were definitely lower, but they weren't as low as the first sample. So there were still some amounts of radioactivity there. There was elevated alkalines and acids, as well as some of the VOCs were elevated as well, specifically like methylene chloride and toluene.
Those are really hard. That's hard chemistry to break down. If you could, at least for me, anyhow, that takes a little while. That's some chemistry that's very, I call it exotic. It does not break down very easily. I mean, it can be over time, but I don't know your experience, Rohat, but that's some very unique chemistry. And so it doesn't surprise me that didn't completely go away.
Yeah, especially trapped in the soil, it would take a lot longer to degrade.
Right.
Well, these are, I mean, the fact that it is degrading, this is where we're going to get a little bit crazy here, because the fact that it is degrading, mainstream science will tell you this is an impossibility, that these are, quote, forever chemicals, that they can't go away. The fact that they're decreasing in some of these, in precipitous, I mean, in massive ways, is undreamed of to the mainstream out there. In fact, because we started this, I want to say in around December is when we really started putting boots on the ground as far as on this project. And then here we are right now. I mean, we're into July. I mean, this would, in most cases, I got to be real careful what I say here because it will be misunderstood. But there are places 20 years ago that were declared Superfund sites that weren't this bad. So, we're definitely on the rise. Look, despite the testing, folks. Okay, so we did another. I'll add my test in here too. People are going to want to know what we did and what moved the needle, and that's really what we're the bigger part of why we're congregated here. Well, really, also, I want you to know that everything you are officially told by your government, city, local, federal, county, they're usually going to lie to you. Like we just talked a moment ago, they're putting out public service announcements telling everybody to go jump in this thing. I'm not going to tell you not to. You do what you want to do. I'm not getting anywhere near this thing. And like Dr. Will said, nobody's seen any fish out there. Nobody. So what does that tell you? So go to my test. Okay. That consists of what I'm seeing in terms of vegetation down by the water. Despite what Rohit and Dr. Will are saying, I knew we were moving along when I'm looking at trees that don't look stressed. We put them in at not the best time of year. The best time of year to plant a tree, a deciduous tree, is going to be in the fall or in the winter. Definitely not in the spring. We planted these in the spring, and it is blowing my mind that A, they saw no stress, and B, nearly all of them have fruit sets on them. In fact, I'll have to do a video out there to show it. And like I said, a stressed out tree ain't putting on fruit, okay? It just doesn't happen. So, folks, we're moving the needle in a big, big way. So how do we do this? Well, that's where I want to throw it over to Pat, and he's going to talk about, remember, folks, I had to do the due diligence. Everybody's breaking my chops saying, hey, tell us what you used. Well, part of it was my biocomplete compost, but like I said, there was a part that was proprietary, and I didn't tell you about it. And that's where Pat's going to talk about what we used.
Yeah, sure, Billy. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you doing everything you have done. You're a true warrior. And thank you, Rohit, for everything that you've done as well. So I've been very lucky to meet Will, get to know Will and work with Will, and be on this mission, you know. So I'm very lucky that I was introduced by Dr. Pete Chambers to Will, who looked at me and said, I only know one guy that's as crazy as you and talks like you, so I'm going to introduce you to Will. And so, yeah, I've been on this crazy mission for human beings and our health and our environment for quite a long time. And we all felt like we were on islands, of course, for quite a while, for sure. And it's just, it's good to run into people who understand your language, number one. With Will, having the soil saviors, the creation of soil saviors, which was what something that I was lucky to come up with, I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever, for the name. And it works perfectly with the program that that Will has put together. And it all, it just clicks, because not only the nutrients are there, everybody wants to put nutrients and organic matter in the soil, but they don't fully understand the microorganisms, the non-GMO probiotics, the collections from around the world, that the diversity that needs to be put in the soil and be able to address not only breaking things down to make, you know, bioavailable nutrients for plants, but also to go after these very harmful elements in the environment. And I'm up here in North Dakota, and every week we've got crop dusters, we've got massive spray rigs all around us. And I'm treating, you know, the property here with Soil Saviors products on a weekly basis, because I have no choice. I have no choice. The drift and everything else. I've gotten sick this year, and I got sick last year when they turned the crop dusters loose. You have diarrhea for 3 days, all that, you know, you're being coated with some pretty nasty stuff. You're inhaling some pretty harmful elements. And, I'm getting human sided when I'm outside, when they're out, you know, but, that's part of it. But nonetheless, I'm not surprised by the results. I'm not surprised by any of the results, because we know that there are non-GMO microorganisms, probiotics, collections in those boxes, that address every single one of these elements and these toxins. So it's not surprising that the numbers are going where they are.
Yeah, Doc, why don't you talk to us about what's in? Okay, folks, let me just tell you how this went down. As far as using their product, I didn't want to talk about it. And I said I wasn't going to talk about it until we had some legitimate results. Remember, folks, I don't stand behind anything until I've done the due diligence on it big time. Now, in addition to that project out there, I have clandestine locations that, and Dr. Will, I think you did get to see the high tunnel, right? Did I show you that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we did an experiment out there. We had a box. We have 14 raised beds out there. One of them was our control. We used three boxes where we put down Dr. Will's and Pat's Soil Saviors elixir. And then we used three boxes where we put down my stuff alone. And then we did seven where we combined them both. And folks, I ain't even going to lie. The reason why I knew what to do out on that project is because inside this high tunnel where we had 14 beds that would not grow anything, couldn't start seeds, couldn't do anything. The area where it worked the best is where we combined my BioComplete compost with what's in that Soil Saviors box. And Doc, why don't you tell us because there's a number of things you mix together and you go about it a certain way. So why don't you talk to us about what's in there? And, you know, some people are going to think they're alchemists when they're putting this stuff together, but it's totally harmless. In fact, I drink a portion of it every day.
So it's like a cake recipe. You got all the components in the box to make the recipe, to make the elixir, as you called it, to then spray it on. It's a liquid. There's over 1,000 strains of organisms. There's bacteria, there's fungi, there's mycelia, there's all different kinds. And these are all naturally occurring organisms. They, extremophiles, some of them, they've been harvested from very extreme environments on the planet. And the reason why there are seven components is because you can't mix all of them together. At least I haven't figured out at this point yet on how to do that. But so you have several different ingredients basically that you mix together, and then you deploy them right away, because you're basically, everything's in a dormant state, those thousand organisms, and then all the different nutrients that are there. And then when you deploy them out into the environment, you have food for the microbes to get going, and then you have food for the whatever's growing there as well. So it's, I like it more like a cake recipe. So if you go to the, you go to the store, grandma used to get a cake box, you know, a box of cake mix, and you have, all you gotta do is, you know, add some liquid and some eggs and, you know, mix it all together, and then you bake your cake. So it's kind of like that. So all the different ingredients get mixed up in water, and then you spray them on foliarly, or you spray them on the soil. These are organisms that they break down and decontaminate by digesting the contaminants. So their food sources are heavy metals, are petrochemicals and hydrocarbons and all these different contaminants. And then the diversity of the organism strains, just like epigenetics and Bruce Lipton and some of the other researchers over the last 20 years have really become prevalent in sharing this information, is the immunity, the secret to immunity is the diversity and the quantity of strains. So the more different kinds of bacteria and funguses that you can have in your environment, that's your immunity or your immune system. Mm-hmm. And so that's the secret is, you want to call it alchemical. I mean, that's fine. I really believe it is, because it's not chemistry. It is alchemical, meaning it's natural science. Alchemical is really at its root natural science. That's the science of nature. And that used to be a really prevalent mainstream way of looking at things prior to the 1870s. The 1870s, things really changed when Rockefeller medicine started, and Rockefeller academia, where they meaning academia, began to break things down elementally and separating them out. So, you know, your stomach is separated from your nose, and your nose is separated from your ankle, but yet we're all one. And so alchemical, natural sciences, looks at everything as a whole organism, as in the soil, like Billy is talking about those 14 boxes, those 14 raised beds he's talking about, that whole bed is an organism unto itself. And so whether you're putting what he's calling his biocomplete, which Billy's an excellent alchemist that way, because he's using his chemistry, he's using microorganisms, he's using elements, and he's using naturally occurring humic matter. And so we've just done that in a little different way, basically to amp things up. So we've got organisms over 1,000 strains that are in our product. And when you put these products, mix them, especially with Billy's compost, they just absolutely love Billy's compost. That's like their home. And so when you put the elements into the home and turn them loose, they do things that are they're unbelievable. Like I said, I've shared these test results, Rohit's as well as mine, with some business associates I know that are engineers as well, and they say the things can't be done. Well, it's being done, and we've got the data to support the digestion and breakdown of some of these things. So there's really no such thing as forever chemicals. I know Rohit wasn't involved in the PFAS contamination, decontamination that was Pat and I, but we've got some documentation where we've had breakdown and remediation of the PFASs. And if anyone knows about PFAS contamination, I don't remember exactly what the PFAS stands for. It's I don't even know what it stands for, but they call them forever chemicals. And so there's no such thing anymore. Like, these organisms and this recipe that we have breaks down those that chemistry and breaks it down into colloid minerals and essential fatty acids, which is a benefit for the environment. So we're taking a contaminant, which is bad for us, bad for the environment, and digesting it into elements like essential fatty acids and minerals that are needed as a food source for the environment. And so that's pretty huge. I believe it's pretty huge anyhow, and it's real because now we have the data to support that. And I deeply appreciate Rohit working on this with Billy, because this is really a huge thing in my opinion.
I'll tell
I just wanted to add this, Billy.
Sure.
Make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. Polyfluorokill substances is the PFAS, basically. I'm trying to, you know, it's all the big words are intended to cause confusion. Number one, common sense and knowing that there are things out there to solve problems. Humans suffer right now from this, and I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying there's a large number of humans that suffer from this condition, not asking why things are going wrong, and then not because they don't ask why and really identifying what's causing the problem, then it's impossible for them to find a solution. And that's what's important for people to start understanding, especially the parents out there. Why are things going wrong? Why are humans getting sick? There's solutions, trust me. But somebody wrote in here, I just want to bring this up, Billy. Livestock and animals will remediate faster than your remediation efforts. So no, I just wanted to help them understand this. No, because cattle and horses and a lot of other animals are dropping dead around the country because of PFAS, because of these chemicals ending up in soil, in the grass that they're eating, and also in the water that they're drinking. So no, livestock and animals will not remediate destroyed toxic soil. You'll just have dead animals. So you have to have the microorganisms, and you have to have the organic matter, and you have to have the minerals to do this correctly. And then the animals will live an amazingly healthy life. And that's how that's supposed to go. So I just wanted to really break that down and also go into when Will started talking about 1870 and germ theory, which actually started maybe actually as early as 1850, which was German chemical companies funding germ theory. People have to understand this. Iowa, 12 Iowa lakes, beaches at 12 Iowa lakes. People are being told they can't swim there this summer because of bacteria, high levels of bacteria. Well, the high levels of bacteria are in the water at those beaches because the high levels of nitrogen and other ag chemicals that have gotten into the water, and the explosion of the bacteria is to fix and break down all of the toxins that mankind has put into the soil and into the waterways, right? So understand that the motives for German chemical companies and other chemical companies to blame the bacterias, the fungi, and other what they call germs and germ theory in general, and what it's doing to the environment and why those bacteria explode in numbers to fix the environment, which is exactly what happens in a human body when they call it an infection. That's how you come to understand that what they're telling you is just simply not true. It's just simply not true. So,
yeah, I mean, this whole system we live in, you know, it was under the Flexner report that, you know, up until that time, naturopaths and MDs, the whole nine yards, they were all on equal playing field. And now because of what like Dr. Will and Pat were talking about here, we live in this reductionistic worldview, like Dr. Will was saying, where you don't look things in a holistic form. This is why we get along so great, because what he's describing is essentially permaculture. I'm doing on a macro level what he's looking at on a micro level. And why I think our two solutions work out even better is because a lot of what's in the super soldier. I'm seeing Pat's email up there, organic super soldier. I mean, it's a cool handle, but I got sidetracked there. But anyway, what's going on is that we have a combination of my organisms that I'm using are obligate. Man, I'm hearing a lot of, I think it's coming on your end, Rohit. Yeah, Rohit, I'm hearing a lot of background. I'm hearing a lot of feedback on your end. I just muted you for a moment there. Anyway, what we see in Dr. Will's product, he has a fair amount of what's called facultative organisms. And honestly, he's dealing, meaning that they can go aerobic or anaerobic. They have that ability to do both. And they don't come alive. Now, to the question, I'm answering a person's question here. He says, I fear that imported microbes not natural to our local area, potential turning into, quote, kudzu vine of the Hellenian over. No. It doesn't work that way. If these microbes, it doesn't work that way in this, not like this. They basically come alive when needed. I'm overly simplifying this. So if let's say I take compost and I make it here in Western North Carolina, and I send it out to Texas, a lot of those microbes are not going to make it because they are adapted to my region. When I send them to another place, the ones that aren't going to adapt there, now some, the ones that do are going to do well, but it doesn't work out that way in the microbe world. So Dr. Will and Pat have what's called a lot of facultative organisms that can go either way. Everything I'm using are obligate anaerobes, meaning that they can only survive in an aerobic state. So when I mix his facultative organisms, and he also has, like I said, they can go either way, along with my aerobic organisms, folks, we're seeing things that would blow my mind. I mean, that are blowing my mind. But here's the thing. You don't need both of them. You could just use the Soil Savior product. And in fact, if you have any idea that toxicity is going on out there, I would use that about a month before you ever put compost on it. And the biggest reason why is if you have things out there, it's like this, you know, when the people came over on the Mayflower, they didn't all make it. Then subsequent trips, they got more and more and more, and finally got to the point where they're wiping out the native populations. Okay.
I won't even get into 1492 and the Mayflower and who he really was. We're not even gonna get into that shit.
But, shame on you guys.
As far as this, I just want to bring this up as far as kudzu vine of Helen. And so when they talk about invasive species, right? So soil is global. So when a nutrient is missing in the soil, and Will will echo this and expand upon it as much as he'd like, but kudzu, for instance, and other invasive species, so to speak, are growing in soil. Well, there was soil where they came from, and there was nutrient deficiencies in the soil where they came from because they were growing so plentifully there, because that's what weeds or medicinal herbs do, again, is pull the nutrients out of the atmosphere to fix the soil because it's missing the nutrients that that particular weed or herb pulls out of the environment or the atmosphere to fix the soil. That's how nature fixes itself. So there's no such thing as invasive, right? It's like somebody on an airplane lands in the United States and has symptoms of Ebola and spreads. It's Americans aren't different than people somewhere else. Yes, they've been exposed to other things, but we're still humans. We're still a breeding ground for whatever microorganisms, whatever toxins, synthetic chemicals, heavy metals, whatever are going to make us go sideways, right? So as far as the microbes go, when Will says the plentiful numbers, the diversity in the population is the key, because they always end up monitoring each other and getting to a perfect balance that they're supposed to be when they fix the environment. That's all it is. So having more diversity is always better. It's always better.
So you're telling me that DEI only works in a compost pile.
Well, look, I mean, there's extremophiles that will specifically knock the population of certain bacteria down and monitor them.
Exactly.
And actually exterminate them to keep them under control, right? That's the whole policing of the microbial universe.
So on the microbial level, which is different than the kudzu level, the kudzu is a plant, and the plant actually does really well in the environment of the southern United States, southeastern United States. It does well in that environment, and there's also no predator to that plant, or there's no controlling other plants that create exudates that then would keep it in control. So it's not the same, because the organisms that we have Like Pat mentioned, they're extremophiles, meaning they grow and reproduce naturally in very extreme environments, like very low in the ocean floor at like 8,500 feet, very acidic, sulfur, hot vents. They don't reproduce at the level of the surface level. They just eat, they do their thing, and then they're done. Their life has cycled. They're unable to reproduce because of the diversity of the other organisms that are all policing them and keeping them in check. And so unlike kudzu, which is one singular organism in essence that has that has brought into an environment that has food and temperature and so forth really good for them. We have 1,000 strains that police each other. So they literally cannot go pathogenic, or they can't cause an infection like kudzu at all, because there's the diversity is so broad, holding everybody in check.
And that term pathogenic that people throw around all the time, there's the pathogenic term, to people that understand it, means the population has gotten very high of one or two particular organisms to break down, again, the synthetic chemicals and toxins that mankind has unleashed on the environment, right? That's all that is. And there's really, technically, to me anyway, just because I've been in that world for so long, and Will can expand on this as well, there's no true pathogens except what's made in bioweapons laboratories. That's the only real pathogens, because all bacteria, all fungi, all have a use, all have a very important role in the overall environmental, whether the environment is a field and soil or whether it's a human body, they have a very important role within that organism or that environment.
Let me go over to real quick. Real quick, and ask you, you know, in your day job and what you do regarding all of this stuff, I mean, where are you seeing the overall toxicity? I know that everybody's hitting this thing from a different angle, but from you hitting it more from a lab stance, I mean, where are you seeing the toxicity here in the United States of amnesia? I mean, are you seeing, is it getting better? Is it getting worse? And I know to a certain extent that probably seems like a rhetorical question, but where do you see it right now?
Is that to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. As far as the lab, like a lab concern goes, I think that the PFAS chemicals and all were the reason they use them is because they're trying to make something more resistant to heat, oil, water, things like that, right? So that they can grow more. And I honestly don't do a lot of water and soil sampling in general, but there is some level of trying to be resistant, right? In farming and things like that, you want to have it to where you're resistant to various weeds and things like that. So there is. I don't know if I see it more, but I see it consistent for sure of those types of chemicals and the use of those as well.
Man, I mean, this is crazy, y'all, because we're getting to the time where, I mean, it doesn't take, I mean, Doc, every time I go to the store and, you know, I'm trying to get ultimately to that point where the only thing I need to go to the store for is aluminum foil and toilet paper. Not quite there yet. But as I go through there, there are certain items I do get that I'm not, let's say, just, you know, not grown right now. For example, I can't eat lettuce out of my high tunnel anymore. It's summer. Okay. So I got to buy that. So when I go in there and I hit the organic section, man, the prices are going through the doggone roof. And if you compare what you're going to buy, let's say you get the ready-made lettuce. I don't know what that stuff's going for. I just put it in the basket and pay for it. But I do know that the price of it is going up and up and up along with everything else. And honestly, if these are the environments that we're growing this food in, I mean, have you ever tested any of this stuff that's coming off the shelf? I mean, there was one guy I knew. I met him at the Stockman Grass Farmer Conference last year, and he blew my mind. When up there at Polyface, he's saying the stuff that they call organic was in worse condition than the regular stuff off the shelf at Walmart. I mean, what are you finding out in your tests?
No, I'm aligned with that. The organic means slightly less toxic in general. It's really, this is why I have never certified organic any of my farm or any of the meat, just because I'm not going to pay the extortion fee because it doesn't mean really any healthier. I look at general vitality. I can look at nutrient density. I can tell you, you know, amino acid profile. So that's what I'm, you know, I'm looking for: nutrient dense, high vitality food, and no toxicity.
And the organic status is just a checklist to meet a criteria. That's all.
That's all it is. They really don't do any testing at all. It's on your honor, and you check boxes, and you pay a fee, and you get the organic label.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good night, man. If this is the state of the world we're living in, man, we better be growing our own stuff. And that's exactly why this, what we're doing right now, is so important. But for all you folks out there that are writing in wondering, hey, okay, I got this garden out here, or I bought this piece of property, and, you know, I don't know whether or not it's good. Real quick, I mean, I know we're coming to the close on this thing, but Dr. Will, talk to me about if somebody were to want to, you know, order the Soil Saviors product, because obviously I don't have my compost for sale, but you don't need that, folks. I mean, not to get rid of the real, real nasty stuff. What does this look like for a person, let's say, because you can scale this up to where it's on high acreage or whether it's on the city lot. Most of our people listening right now are going to be in, let's say, suburbia or let's say small acreage. I mean, what does this look like for them? It's a rhetorical question because I know, but I want to hear them from the horse's mouth.
So the Soil Savior boxes, it comes in four different sizes. The small one being, we call, a 5-acre box. That is basically, if you were to use the contents in that box, it will do 5 acres all at one time. But if you have, like you say, a small lot, a quarter acre lot, and you're doing gardening, basically that box is going to serve you for the entire growing season. And so the directions and everything are in the box. You're basically mixing up a little bit as you need it and deploying it from once a week to once a month. I mean, I do my gardens once a week, sometimes twice, just because I want nutrient dense. I want fast growth. I mean, I got corn right now that's growing about 4 to 5 inches a day right now, and I'm heavy feeding that thing every 3 days. I believe in feeding heavy to grow nutrient dense food and high vitality food. So, price wise, I think Pat can cover that because that's his wheelhouse. I'm more into the technical side of that. And of course, then, because all you, y'all are, you know, coming through, Billy's network here, there's going to be a benefit of that as well. So I think Pat can cover that.
Yeah, sure. No, it comes down to, you know, if you're going to treat an entire acre, and you got to remember, we're remediating heavy metals and synthetic chemicals at the same time, that it's only $75 an acre. That breaks down to somebody for a, you know, even a quarter acre garden, you've got 20 treatments, which, you know, breaks down to like $10 per treatment, whatever it is.
Quarter acre garden's a big freaking garden too. I mean,
yeah. So you're looking at only, you know, for foliar spraying your plants and your soil, you know, you're looking at $10-$15 per treatment type thing. I mean, that's, if you want to go to the big box stores and buy some synthetic fertilizers, be my guest, but I'm not eating that. I'm not eating that. And I certainly wouldn't feed it to my children. So it's very inexpensive. It's very, very affordable, in comparison to, you know, you think about now, if somebody has 20 acres and it's contaminated severely, obviously that's going to be a different
conversation.
Will's going to look at that and break that down.
What did Billy, what did you treat, to get, for, the test results? We started, around the holidays in December. And then I don't remember the dates on row hands. I think it was June. So we had basically 6 months, And how often were you treating that land? We'll just look at the degradation side of it. But what did you get? Five treatments, six? I don't remember.
I was doing it. Well, before I answer that, let me just say, Mountainside with Ken and Amy saying your animals will go to the areas treated with Soil Savers product before they go to the untreated areas. At least RU's did.
I shared his video. Thank you, Ken and Amy, because I shared their video on my Facebook and other other pages, which every test we've ever done, the animals will always stack on top of the strips, the test strips, even up to three weeks and longer after those areas have been sprayed.
Yeah. As far as how often I was doing it, folks, it's going to vary. And also depending on where you are. So the area I was treating was about an acre. And so let's say that 5-acre box, I was going out once a week and I was doing it at, think about how quickly it could have happened, because this sort of thing doesn't work as well in the dead of winter. Okay. You need warmer. It helps. If you have really, really nasty stuff out there, your microbes are going to work better when it's at least 60. Correct me if I'm wrong. If it's about 60 degrees or warmer, the soil temperature is somewhere there about.
Yeah. We have something that'll work at 50, but 60 is much better.
Okay. So most of the time it was not like that. And we had a weird winter anyway. So I was going out once a week. I was mix this stuff up at home, have to make sure it wasn't freezing that day, go out there, spray this stuff out. And then, so I did most of that through the winter. So it was once a week for the most part. It was once a week. And there was a time where I missed. So there were a number of applications out there, but it was once a week. I can't help but wonder, had I done this in the warmer time of the year, had we probably would have, you know, crossed the finish line a little bit faster. So having this whole disaster happened in fall, it happened in October this last year. So this October will be a year, and here it is. We're essentially across the finish line. So folks, I mean, it's simple to do. They'll give you directions for 1 acre, break it down. And that's another cool thing. Using this product is like using compost. You can't overdo it. That's the cool thing. I mean, you can't overdo it. In fact, I tried in one of my test places. I was like, okay, let's go ahead and give it a shot. And no deleterious effects at all. So folks, I mean, when you put the right stuff in order to get that nutrient density out of your food, you got to have good soil. If the plants aren't putting exudates down there into the soil, the bacteria and the fungi aren't getting a shopping list. If they don't get a shopping list, that means your nematodes don't eat, your protozoa don't eat. All the other things in that soil taxonomy ain't happening. So it all starts with having good soil. And I'll be honest with y'all, it's kind of a cheat sheet. It really is. It's kind of a cheat sheet to get you off and running. So I'm not going to, you know, folks, if you want it, you want it. We'll have it in the description of the show notes here. And this is why you heard me. People were kind of frustrated with me, y'all. I mean, they were like, man, are you ever going to tell us what you're using? I'm like, no, I don't know what the results are. I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody until I know something. So now you do. And now, you know, you can find it in the description of this podcast, how we're doing it here. And then anybody listening to audio platform, it'll be there as well. But folks, it's a joy to be able to know that there are solutions out there, and they don't involve big ag, big pharma, big anybody. It's just going with these intrepid people out here that are, I mean, if you hear Dr. Will's stories or some of the stuff, I don't know if you'd be willing to tell about. We ought to have you talk about some of these stories, these harrowing, like Indiana Jones kind of stuff, y'all, where he's, you know, treating things and certain powers that shouldn't be don't necessarily want these things done. So, yeah.
We won't do that. We won't do that tonight.
No, those conversations are always colorful to say, and educational. Jody Ballantyne asks, what is the shelf life of your product, please? Minimum of three years. It's you know, there's components in that box that are 60,000 years old. So understand that, yeah. You know.
I've done some long-haul degradation and have had things on shelves for 5, 8, and 10 years. You do get some degradation, especially the microbial degradation, but if you buy it, And you put it on your shelf for 8 years, shame on you. I mean, you know, you need to be using this stuff to grow some food, not put it on a shelf.
Yeah, or in the pasture setting, you know, where I've used it, I got an area that I'm treating as a test plot over here right now. And, you know, you need it. I never understood that, why people will buy a product like this and not put it to work. Because, folks, let me give you another little secret here. When you put something out, let's say your soil is absolutely messed up. If you can start managing it properly, let's say this gets you the ability to get across the finish line to where you're tying up the toxins and you're able to put some good solid life down in the soil. The cool thing about it is, in most cases, it stays that way unless you have really lousy management, or unless you got, you know, I would do it from time to time anyway, with just because of the chemtrails are dropping on us. I mean, and even with all the heavy chemtrails, I would wonder what these numbers would be like if we didn't. I mean, we were getting absolutely decimated with the chemtrails while this was happening. So, yeah, I wonder what would it look like if we weren't fighting all of the above. But anyway, it's pretty cool to know that we've crossed the finish line. So,
hey, I also just wanted to mention that, you know, that the PFASs that are in the soils and things like that, they're still, obviously, like we mentioned earlier, there's no fish in the water. There's also not animals around. They're also getting sick and dying, you know, dogs and things like that. I know stories I've been told.
Oh, glad. Yeah.
Of dogs being sick and dying. So, you know, once we use this material to clean stuff up, the livestock and the animals in general, whatever it may be, will also help to determine that it is getting healthier. So if they're all back in the, if they're all back in the area, like fish come back, dogs come back, other live, you know, it's not necessarily livestock, but just the deer, animals in general,
the deer
and all those. All of that. We have to make sure that we're looking for those indicators as well, because otherwise, you know, we can't go on just one thing. You know, there's a multitude of things that are helping the soil and to get better, to get healthier, and start developing the trees and the willows and the bamboo and all as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when this first happened, there was a lady that had her goats got away. They got down by the river, and if you know anything about a goat, they ain't crossing no streams. So the goats got down by the water. I guess a couple of them drank it. All the ones that drank that water are dead. And a few of the dogs, we got reports early on. I'm glad you brought that up, Rohit, because that's totally in my wheelhouse. And that's exactly what I'm looking for. We had rescue dogs that were down by that river. Several of them, I mean, they even stopped talking about how many of those guys died, which really, really burns me up, because they knew exactly what was up. But the really awesome indicator to all of this is, it's like removing the wolf from Yellowstone Park. What happened? Streams quit flowing when they did that. A lot of people don't know this story. They got rid of the top predator out of Yellowstone, and now the entire environment, you're thinking, okay, we get rid of the top predator, what on earth? They ended up bringing it back years and years later, and guess what? Those same streams that quit running all of a sudden started running again. So one thing is, and this is a problem with our idiotic reductionistic worldview in the Western cultures. We think, like Dr. Will was saying from the very beginning, instead of looking at things in a holistic view, we extinct one species within here, not realizing that we just took down the whole Jenga block.
Yeah, it's a full ecosystem.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So we got to be monitoring. Yeah, fish, we're looking, okay, if the fish aren't right, well, I know that there are certain birds that are predators of those fish. If the fish aren't right, everything above and below that fish isn't right. It's like, you know, if you go into the Serengeti and all you have are a bunch of lions, okay, and you got no gazelle, well, those lions are going to go extinct. And it's the same exact thing, even on a microbial level. So, folks, when we look out under the microscope, when I say me, I mean mostly my wife, Michelle, if we see a bunch of bacteria, well, if all I see is bacteria and there's no predators And what are the things that eat bacteria? Protozoa. You know, there are other things in there, nematodes. There are a number of other things that eat those. But if you don't have that full array in that soil, if we don't see all those things, well, that's why we can't call it biocomplete unless it has certain numbers. And until those and different numbers of organisms in there, because the same as above, so below, what you see above the soil, like Rohit was just talking about with all these other indicators in your environment, the same thing happens at the microbial level. So if we don't see excellent numbers in these proper balances, we know everything's out of whack. And folks, that's where this thing is going to help you. This is where Soil Saviors is going to help you get a leg up. But honestly, if you're going right back, you're going to have to keep buying it. If you go back to bad management practices, I can tell you that when we go out here and we take this awesome biocomplete compost and we put it out, if we do the right things, it'll stay good. If you don't do the right things, or they're spraying a bunch of garbage on you every day, I would do it anyway periodically just for GP. So, yeah.
And to your environmental and animal species point, you know, I've witnessed that happen here in North Dakota because Mariah bought this farm from a conventional farmer. And since that time, obviously, the chemicals have not been used. A lot of Soil Saviors has. And thousands of birds now come here in the spring to nest. There's salamanders everywhere. There's frogs all over the place. The deer have come back. There's all kinds of wildlife coming back here. And I can tell you, we're surrounded by millions of acres of big ag chemical farming and all the wildlife. This is like a glowing frequency in the middle of freaking a toxic world. So
like a lighthouse, just calling them in.
Yeah. Beacon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's another point too. People can use the product. And if you want to throw that link up, your link up again, Billy, if people want to use the product on their hunting food plots, you will be amazed because the deer that come to your property, they're all coming to your property and they're going to walk right past your neighbor's farms and property. They're going straight to your property and you're going to have a pick of whatever buck you want to shoot because we've seen that numerous times. A lot of
Yeah, there we go. Well, folks, I mean, there you have it. We've crossed the finish line, and this is one of the biggest heavy lifters out there. We did basically if we were just using my stuff alone, we're looking at least a few years. Folks, we're doing this in under 6 months. So that's kind of undreamed of. And we got more stuff. Like I said, I got other examples and stuff that I could show you, but I'll save that for a video of a visual medium to kind of give you a better explanation of it. But the real truth of it is, folks, this test beds that we had, we put Grazon infested garbage out there and we just let it sit for a couple of years and you couldn't even start seeds in it. It was awful. Now we're getting, I mean, it's absolutely blowing up. So if you're making your own compost out there, and honestly, Dr. Will, this stuff you told me early on, mix it in with your compost. And it's been a winner. So, in fact, I think I told you and Pat that I went out there, did an experiment. I mean, folks, this is how crazy it is. I went out there, got some of that garbage compost at one of the local municipalities, okay? Basically bio sludge. That's what I got. And I turned this stuff around in a month using a combination of my biocomplete compost along with the Soil Saviors product. And, I mean, blows my mind. We looked at it under the microscope, and the minimum numbers to be biocomplete, according to Dr. Elaine Ingham, is 135 micrograms per gram of bacteria and fungi. Folks, we were at 300, and we started it like nothing but bacteria. So that happened in a month. So there's a whole lot of wonderful things you can do with this stuff, folks, and we'll be talking more about it in the future. So why don't you guys tell everybody where they can find you? Let's start with you, Pat.
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram at SoilSavior1, the number one, at SoilSavior1. And then, I would just say a closing message, to be honest, Billy, it's just we all have to do our part. We're not focused on big ag and all of that. They're going to come along as that system continues to fall apart, that, you know, we're not going to go to war with any of that. We want all the land to be healed. We want to do the right thing. But right now, all those folks out there who have property, hunting land, gardens, orchards, hey, you can do your part and you can fix your own environment. And that's right now what we can all do. And that's why this is so important, because we can build the Soil Saviors Army and we can have millions of people across this country fixing millions of acres.
Speaking of which, you do have, I don't know if you're willing to talk about it right now, but as I understand it, you have a few areas and some pretty notable places in this country that have been seriously made toxic. And you're probably going to be working on cleaning some of those places up, as I understand it. Is that still a go?
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, Will's got a lot of places, and we've certainly been in talks with some folks, all of us. And Billy, you know of some of those, and you're going to be part of that. But we've got, yeah, a lot of the biosolids have been spread 70 to 100 million acres, some of it in some really, really important areas that have affected people very negatively, that we're trying to grow food for impoverished people. And we're going to turn that around. So, and you're part of that whole project, and I'm excited, Billy.
Yeah. Places in with seriously high population density and, yeah. And they're polluted up one side and down the other. Dr. Will, where can everybody find you?
You can search me. I'm going through a major overhaul on my online presence, but you can definitely search me. Will Spencer Naturopath, Will with one L, Spencer Naturopath. I've had over 400. I've got 460 plus interviews online. You just got to find them, because they're fairly hard to come by. So you have to just search me out. I'm around. So I'm there. Otherwise, just go to Soil Saviors, where Pat is. That's
yeah.
And I'm the guy in the background, kind of, you know. Yeah. What's that, Pat?
Anybody with any questions, you can reach out, and we'll be happy to answer any of your questions. Email us or email Billy or contact Will or I, or, you know, we'll be happy to answer any questions. And Rohit has a massive amount of experience in, he can certainly tell you whether you've got good soil or bad soil, let's put it that way.
And I really appreciate Rohit coming on and being part of this, because I feel it's time, you know, that we start all working together. It's been fairly isolated. It's been a real challenge to get a lot of academics and a lot of accredited people to really, you know, work doing the work like this. And I really appreciate Rohit doing, you know, hands in dirt and getting things done. So thank you so much, Rohit, for being here today.
Yep.
Is there a place everybody can find you? Well, at least tell Neethi to get on here and tell everybody where to find her. She runs the food church and does some pretty incredible doggone work. And it was really his wife that facilitated. I didn't even though me and Ro had met before, it was until his wife basically said, hey, you know, I can. She basically has a lot of tentacles out there, and she knows a lot of people and can, you know, get things to happen. So sorry to interrupt there, Ro.
Yeah, no worries.
There's the boss. She's gonna tell us what's going on here now. You're gonna have to unmute yourselves. Ro, yeah,
you're muted.
Hey, there you go. I was cooking, sorry. what's the question?
Yeah, I was telling everybody where they can find you, but it would seem like a waste of an interview if we didn't tell them what you guys were up to and, you know, how they can, you know, be a part
of food church. Yeah. What's going on there?
Right. Well, you know, my food church, look, Joel Salatin and John Moody put me on the Rogue Food Conference because they wanted me to share with everybody how it was that I was able to operate unregulated. And of course, I was then thrown into the fire, and I had to, like, I was like, yeah, how am I doing this? Like, what exactly is my secret sauce? And so as I researched it, what I realized is that, it is a problem of the fact that I was unincorporated. A lot of people think that I operate under some kind of PMA or something of that nature because I initially established a church because mostly I was trying to be able to exercise free speech, which I should just be able to do, right? And what I've learned on this journey is that if you want to deregulate, you have to unincorporate. So I'm going to make a new t-shirt now that says, you know, if you want to deregulate, you need to unincorporate. And that goes for all the farms, all the homesteads, everyone who's in business who thinks that they need to be incorporated in order to operate. Because when you incorporate, you are actually, without full disclosure, partnering with the de facto corporation, the corporatocracy, and you are allowing them to be a partner in your business unknowingly. And so therefore you are opening yourself up to their regulatory oversight, which you don't need to do and you have no reason to participate. And so anybody who wants to learn more about that, let me know. I mean, you know, it's been kind of messy, I will be honest, because I was thrown into that, not expecting the level of response that I would get in working with someone like Joel Salatin. Obviously, that was stupid. I should have realized. But but it forced me to level up and really, you know, find out what it is that I needed to do to be able to help everybody. And so what people don't comprehend about the food church is that I have always operated out of the goodness of my heart. It is a philanthropic operation. It is not a for-profit. And so, but I am fully unincorporated at this point. I did start out as a nonprofit because I just didn't know any better. And a lot of you out there are also forming LLCs or trying to do PMAs or trying to do something of that nature because you were tricked by the corporatocracy into believing that is the only way that you can operate in business, and this is a lie. However, you have to have knowledge. And what did Jesus say? Jesus says, "My people perish for lack of knowledge of the truth." And so I am telling you that this is written in the Bible. It is the original, you know, Bible from the Geneva Bible, not the King James Bible, where King James made this godless Bible because he wanted you to worship man. You know, I think most of us on this call choose God as our king and not man as our king. And if you choose God as your king and not man as your king, then you will want to know what I have discovered. And so, you know, let awesome. Me know if you're interested and I'll be happy to share it with you.
So where can they find you? What's the best way for them to get a hold of y'all?
The food chart. Oh, I have the.
Do you have a website or a way of social media?
If they go to farm2forkmeatriot.org, they'll find me.
Say that again. Say that again slowly.
farm2forkmeat.org. And I'll also paste it in the chat.
Farm to Fork Meat.
Right. Farm to Fork Meat Riot. Sorry.
M-E-A-T or M?
M-E-A-T.
Yeah, right. Meat, like food. Right. Yeah, perfect.
And okay. When you say farm two, is it T-O or the T-O, number two? Yeah.
Farm, T-O, Fork, M-E-A-T, Riot, R-I-O-T.org.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, cool. Doc Will would have to ask to how to spell meat. This could be so easily misunderstood.
I've been doing this a while. I'm telling you, I screw up all the time.
Will thought it was M-E-E-T. He thought it was a dating service.
That's what
I don't know.
You get to meet cattle that way.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm running with some outlaws right here now. Hey, I want to thank everybody in the chat. I want to thank, obviously, Pat, Will, Rohit, and Neethi for all making this possible. Hey, y'all, it's a crazy world we live in. We're going to leave the how to get a hold of everybody down below. Until next time, y'all, stay alert, stay alive. I'm grooving with the truth, truth, truth. Feeling that just
from the smallest sprout. The harmony begins in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune